The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode of Astronomy Cast is brought to you by Swinburne Astronomy Online, the world's longest-running online astronomy degree program. Visit astronomy.swin.edu.au for more information.
Astronomy Cast, episode 326, Atmospheric Dust. Welcome to Astronomy Cast, our weekly facts-based journey through the cosmos, where we help you understand not only what we know, but how we know what we know. My name is Fraser Kane. I'm the publisher of Universe Today, and with me is Dr. Pamela Gay, a professor at Southern Illinois University, Edwardsville, and the director of CosmoQuest. Hey, Pamela, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing today?
Good. Last week we were complaining about cold weather, but now it's been relatively balmy for
the
West Coast.
I hate you with love.
It's great.
I totally
great.
Hate you with love. Yeah, no, we have like four or five. It's going to be a white Christmas here unless something radical and unpredicted happens.
So we get a lot of questions from people about our questions show, which was what we used to do back in the day. We would, you know, we would do our regular episode and then we would do a question show. And people wondered, like, how come you don't do the question show? We do the question show every week live on Google Plus. So if you ever want to join us and ask your questions about space and astronomy, just watch us live on Google Plus. We start at 12 o'clock Pacific, 3 Eastern, and we take about half an hour to do the show, which we're doing right now, but then we also take your questions about space and astronomy and handle them at the end. So people wondering about that, it still happens.
And now it's even more timely. So no more waiting for us to air your question. Just be on air with us.
Just be on air with us and join us and see what we look like and ask your questions. So we still do that. The other questions people have been asking, whatever happened to the Weekly Space Hangout audio feed? How come it's not in with Astronomy Cast? We got a lot of complaints from people that it was sort of polluting the feed. There was too much. But I know a lot of people still really like it. So it's actually in the 365 Days of Astronomy feed. So, and there's lots of other good stuff in that feed as well. So it's a great reason to subscribe. You'll get both the Weekly Space Hangout plus all of the great episodes that normally go into the 365. So that's where it is.
Cheap Astro, Learning Space. Oh, there's so many good things. I've been doing science fiction stories, going ahead and doing narration for that.
Yeah, so there's a ton of content in the 365 feed. So if you're wondering what happened to the Weekly Space Hangout, which is still happening every week, you can get it from there. So much space content.
This episode of Astronomy Cast is brought to you by 8th Light, Inc. 8th Light is an agile software development company. They craft beautiful applications that are durable and reliable. 8th Light provides disciplined software leadership on demand and shares its expertise to make your project better. For more information, visit them online at www.8thlight.com. Just remember, that's www.8thlight.com. Drop them a note. 8th Light, software is their craft.
So when you consider the hazards of spaceflight, it's hard to get worked up about dust bunnies. And yet, atmospheric dust is going to be one of the biggest problems astronauts will face when they reach the surface of other worlds. Where does this dust come from, and what does it tell us about the history of other worlds, and what can we do to mitigate the health risks? In my house, we call them dust dragons. they're substantial collections of dust that have achieved sentience and require a constant battle. Yeah. But so, you know, you put atmospheric dust on the list, and I know, you know, it's sort of, I mean, we deal with these dust storms here on Earth, which can clog the skies and pretty fantastic, but on other worlds, they're going to be big problems.
Well, and it's a completely different kind of problem, depending on what the type of dust it is, what atmospheric height it's at. There's so many different things to consider. And the reason that I kind of rolled out of bed this morning and was like, today we're discussing atmospheric dust, is because there's actually this upcoming dusty inundation for spacecraft, I guess. We have the LADEE mission that's currently up and happily orbiting the moon, at least as if you feel like anthropomorphizing spacecraft, it's happily orbiting the moon. And it just got this great take on Chang'e, the Chinese rover that landed and probably put a bunch of dust up into the atmosphere. Then we have the MAVEN mission on its way to Mars, and it's going to arrive shortly after the Martian atmosphere gets to deal with a comet racing past. And all of these spacecraft are both getting to look at the zero point of what atmospheres normally look like, and then getting to see what happens when they get polluted with all kinds of stuff.
Rosetta. Going to be harpooning a comet next year, later this year. Well, yeah. 2014. We're almost there. This is crazy. Okay, anyway. So, right. So they're having to deal with this dust. And I think it's sort of one of these hazards that most people don't think about, but the planners really have to consider it.
And the other place that this atmospheric dust is really going to nail us over time is, so we have to plan missions around it, we have to worry about solar storms, we have to worry about measuring it, but if you've ever gotten sand or dirt in your clothing, you know that sometimes it makes you contemplate getting naked in public because it's really irritating. And so as we're planning to put people on the moon and on Mars, we need to figure out how to mitigate the effects of dust.
Okay, so let's, you know, here on Earth, how do we experience this dust?
So here on Earth, dust comes in the, oh, wow, the nearby desert is attacking where I live due to high-speed winds. So we've seen massive effects in Beijing where the, not pollution, which is another form of dust, but where the nearby deserts have blown in. We've seen this in Tucson and Phoenix with massive dust storms rolling into the cities. So this is literally the case of wind sweeping up the dust and carrying it along as a wall that can clog your lungs, clog your machinery, get into your clothes, get into your cars, and it's a wreck. The other way we experience here on Earth is volcanism. Several years ago, there was the Icelandic volcano that shall not be pronounced, and it threw dust, in this case, pulverized pumice stone and silicon bits, kilometers up into the Earth's atmosphere, where there was a potential danger to aircrafts that would get their windshields scratched to the point that they could no longer be seen through, and all sorts of danger to the engines on these aircraft. So, well, basically all air flight was shut down going into Europe for a while.
We had Mount St. Helens, and back in the 1980s, and there was like a layer of dust, like snow on everything, all the cars, all the trees, all the houses.
Yeah, yeah, I was living as far south as the Los Angeles Basin, and we experienced Mount St. Helens all the way down there as well.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so we've got a sense of what this dust looks like. You know, we've got these wind processes that whip it up into these clouds. And I mean, if you've never seen pictures of these approaching dust storms, they're pretty terrifying. So then let's look at, you know, a nearby location that doesn't have wind, but the moon is going to have dust, right?
Right. And with the moon, it's actually one of the most bizarre situations where the astronauts who were there were able to see atmospheric dust. And we use the word atmospheric loosely here. We're able to see dust out on the horizon. And while they knew that during the process of landing, they stirred up dust, this was still more than they expected. And earthbound observers have periodically been able to see transient phenomena that could only really be explained as either things that weren't actually being observed or as dust suspended in the atmosphere. And with a lot of mathematical modeling, it's been realized that high energy photons coming from the sun, so X-rays, ultraviolet light, hitting the dust on the moon actually has the energy necessary to strip electrons off of some of these molecules. And as you strip enough electrons off the molecules, you're getting more and more and more positively charged dust until the dust actually starts repelling itself. And these individual grains of dust are capable of suddenly floating up above the lunar surface. And so you end up with an electrostatically suspended layer of dust above the moon.
Is this somewhat related to, like, when we see these great big volcanic explosions, these eruptions, they always have these lightning bolts going through them, right? Because the dust sort of just rubbing together sets up huge static electricity.
So the physics behind these two things is completely different. In this case...
Oh, never mind then.
Yeah. So with the dust on the moon, what we're actually looking at in many ways is... nature's way of saying, hey, Einstein got it right, because when you shine the correct color of light onto something, the electrons fly away. This is the photoelectric effect. So the photoelectric effect writ large on the surface of the moon, with sunlight being involved, will cause charged particles, in this case dust grains, to get so charged that they repel themselves away from the surface. The electromagnetic effect, its force overcomes that of gravity.
Now, this dust on the moon is bad news. I mean, yes. It is really trouble.
This is, it's generally dust made of glass. And one of the most traumatizing yet humorous posters I've ever seen at a science conference was being presented about experiments that are being done where they actually will go to slaughter yards where pigs are being slaughtered and get the freshly removed skin from pigs and use artificial lunar dust. So they look up the chemical composition of lunar dust and recreate it in the laboratory, take this dust with them to a slaughter yard, take the pig skin of the freshly dead pig, and then using carefully measured precise pressure and pressure over time, so how long they exert the pressure, they will grind the dust into the pig skin with different fabrics to figure out which fabric causes the least abrasion to occur and try and understand what do we need to make that layer of fabric between the astronaut and his spacesuit made out of so that, well, those future astronauts get the least abrasion to their skin.
Yeah, if you read the reports that came back from Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin and the other astronauts, you know, this dust, that, you know, as they carried it back into the spacecraft, it got everywhere. And it was not the sort of nice, smooth sand that we're so used to. As you said, it's little pieces of glass that the bombarding of micrometeorites over the billions of years has just chewed up the landscape into this field of glassy dust. And like they were breathing it and it's getting in their lungs. Like this is going to be a big problem.
This stuff makes asbestos look friendly at a certain layer. And you can't just use filters to get rid of lunar dust because it's so tiny in some cases. And when we're looking at the dust on places like the moon and Mars, the dust doesn't settle out of the atmosphere in as permanent a way as it does here on Earth. Here on Earth, you get atmospheric dust, whether it be from some volcano going off, whether it be from, well, weather stirring it up out of a desert, whatever the source. And we have to remember forest fires, their soot is a form of dust, pollution is a form of dust. All of these different forms of dust have the opportunity to eventually settle into water. Most of the surface of the Earth is made up of water. And when the water and the dust mix, well, the dust is removed. On the moon, it just moves around, and the constant impact of micrometeors and larger meteors is generating new dust. Same is true on Mars. And so there's nothing to get rid of the dust. It just gets blown around, settles back down, gets blown around some more, gets settles back down. It's a never-ending problem.
So, okay, so let's look at some other planets then, like Mars, for example. I mean, it's classic for its dust storms, these global dust storms that can just encase the entire planet in this red mist.
And in this case, the composition's slightly different. You have more iron oxides, giving Mars its awesome red color. So this dust is dangerous in slightly different ways. And what's kind of amazing is these giant dust storms that you see essentially enshrouding the entire world. We were extremely worried when we first started sending spacecraft with solar panels to Mars that this dust would have the effect of killing the rovers off rather quickly. But as we learned with Spirit and Opportunity, well, first of all, what the wind brings, it also takes away. So while they did end up covered in dust, the wind would periodically clean them off nice and neat. But the dust also isn't as thick as we might have thought. It turns out that globally, that dust that gets chewed up into the atmosphere is only about 3 microns thick. So that's 3 strands of hair, basically, thick. If you take all the dust that gets put into the atmosphere and settle it all back out across the surface of the world.
And it doesn't require a lot of wind speed to get that dust moving. I mean, I think when you see it in movies and television shows, it's like a horrible windstorm with clogging dust and, you know, everyone's in great danger. But the reality is that you'd barely feel it. You know, the visibility would be reduced, but it would be perfectly safe, I think, to stand out in that windstorm, that dust storm, and go about your business. So it's not as bad as I think we would expect.
And with Mars, the gravity is significantly lower than it is here on Earth. And that means that it doesn't take as much force to get the dust to overcome gravity, essentially. But the other side of this is because the Martian atmosphere is so much thinner than the atmosphere here on Earth, that dust stays in the atmosphere longer here on Earth. So you get these sudden dust storms blowing up, and almost as quickly they settle back down. And so that's kind of neat. Here it can take a couple of years for the dust from a volcano to settle out of the atmosphere.
I think it's also important to note that the dust on Mars is not as dangerous as the stuff we've talked about on the moon, because you've got this wind action that's blowing this dust around and eroding it and smoothing it. And, you know, you're going to get dust everywhere, but it's not going to be the same tiny pieces of glass getting into your lungs.
It's much more a thing about the wind version of rounded rocks on the beach, this constant interaction. And like I said, the composition's just not the same. It's not made out of broken up glasses. It's made up of completely different sets of minerals.
Yeah, I think about the moon. Like, imagine a, you know, someone took a big piece of volcanic glass, like, you know, it's really nice basalt glass, and just smashed it up and then just into a powder. Like, what a nightmare that would be. Okay, so then we've talked about Mars a bit and we've talked about Earth. So, but I mean, even asteroids, this might be an issue, right?
Yeah, and with asteroids, it's a different type of issue and we're still trying to figure it out. In general, asteroids, they don't have a whole lot of mass. That means they don't have a whole lot of gravity. So when you shoot things at asteroids, or when the universe shoots things at asteroids for us, you'd expect the impact to, for the most part, send things into a gravitationally escaping motion. Most of that dust isn't going to settle straight back down to the asteroid itself. But when we look at asteroids, we see in higher numbers than were expected, boulders. And boulders, just like dust, you'd expect to have escape velocities after an impact. And what it appears is happening is, over time, the sunlight hitting an asteroid followed by that same asteroid going into shadow is heating and cooling and heating and cooling and heating and cooling over and over and over until the rock breaks. And so you can end up with thermal conditions leading to things fragmenting, leading to dust being created. So it's a completely different process. So when we land on asteroids, we're not going to have the same dust issues that we have on the moon. They simply aren't going to hold on to as much dust, but we still are going to have dust that we have to worry about.
And I know that a lot of comets are comprised a high amount of both rock and ice, and you get those interactions of that heating and cooling that's going on, that's going to be creating another particular set of dust.
And you also end up with different chemical reactions occurring on the surface of the ices that can lead to larger and larger molecules being found. And essentially, the simple definition of dust is it's a molecule of something that doesn't melt when exposed to normal amounts of sunlight. So you have chemical reactions occurring that build these larger and larger molecules, and this can occur with sunlight hitting the surface of the ice, creating organics through different chemical reactions. And then when the ice surrounding these different molecules gets sublimated, melts straight from solid to gas, the dust ends up getting shot away from the surface of the comet, creating tails that are made out of stuff as well as just plain Jane gases.
So, and then of course, as we have these meteor showers, this is us in many cases getting hit by these microscopic pieces of dust that emanated from the comets and asteroids.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So then I guess, you know, as researchers are looking at the dust, you know, what, you know, as they're trying to study it, I know that the Curiosity rover is designed to look out through the atmosphere of Mars. You know, what kinds of information they're trying to glean from the dust?
Well, at a certain level, there's the, dust, it changes the color of light hitting the surface of a world. Dust preferentially scatters light that is at shorter wavelengths, creating a reddening of the light that gets through. If we can get enough dust in the Earth's atmosphere, that will have the effect of cooling our world. We need a good giant volcano to go off and spew dust into our atmosphere to help cool things down. There's people who've tried to figure out, can we artificially generate the dust that's needed? We have to worry about the biological effects as human beings inadvertently end up breathing in lunar dust, Martian dust that gets through into future human settlements. How bad an effect is that going to have on our lungs? We've learned a lot from cigarettes. We've learned a lot from pollution. We've learned a lot even from people who are dealing with nanoparticles. Well, there's the potential for a lot of disease in the future, so we have to figure that out. There's so many different reasons to worry about dust, both the good effects of cooling off worlds and the bad effects of potentially killing humans. And so we're trying to learn all of that as we study the dust.
I mean, you brought up this concept of geoengineering, that we could release all this dust into the atmosphere and it could cool down the planet as a way to prevent global warming. And it just sounds like a horrible idea with, you know, but, you know, you get this situation where it might be the only idea that you've got left apart from the world overheating. So,
and in the grand scheme of things, ideas of launching like a bazillion small satellites with reflectors, I'd rather have dust in our upper atmosphere. We've at least experienced that enough times over human history to understand how long it takes for volcanic dust and similar composition dust to settle back out of the atmosphere. It's always good to have reversible phenomena.
Right, yeah. Now, I don't want to put you on the spot. Is there dust on Venus?
There should be, but I don't know what frequency the sulfuric acid rainstorms occur at. So I'm not sure if the phase change frequency where you have dust that's created through various effects becoming mud or clay and getting redissolved into the soils.
Yeah, and the atmosphere is like
gross.
93 times more dense, like the surface pressure than Earth. So I wonder, like, would things get more suspended? Would they be like a fluid, like if you're on the surface of Venus, it's like you're a kilometer underneath the ocean.
Well, so there's both massive winds and a much thicker atmosphere. So that means that any dust that was able to survive the acidic nature of the atmosphere could be suspended for months and months and months at a time.
Another place that's really fascinating is Titan. When you think about Titan, it's got about double the density of our atmosphere, double the surface pressure on the surface, but it's got this terrible cold, and yet it rains hydrocarbons.
And so here, there's the potential for all sorts of organic molecules to bind together to form dust. And in this case, with the frequent rainstorms, you have to wonder how much of it's going to be the equivalent of dust that gets trapped up in the Earth's rainstorms. When it rains, you often get pollutants tied in with the rains as well, or sandy dust tied in with the raindrops as well. So yes, there's dust on Titan, but you also have rainstorms. And so again, you have to wonder, is it nice dry dust or nice methane wet dust in this case?
And what about Io? I mean, it's amazing how each of these worlds, it just takes a different form. I mean, think about Io with the volcanic plumes that fly up off above the surface of the moon and rain back down.
And so you're again going to have the volcanic dust, in this case, also just escaping away from Io. So you have that helping to add to the dusty rings that are around Jupiter. And this is part of what you see with Enceladus orbiting Saturn, where its ice geysers are helping to contribute to the rings of Saturn.
And on Europa. You hear that? Brand new research, right?
Yeah.
That they found ice geysers coming out of Europa.
But we still don't, I haven't seen results on if those are contributing to Jupiter's rings. I know Enceladus is.
Right. No, absolutely. But we don't know if it's actually welling up from below the surface, like the actual ocean underneath Europa, or whether it's closer to the surface and it's just some kind of grinding effect. But there is water ice emanating from Europa and going into the atmosphere. And that is just like another reason to get to Europa and put the spacecraft down. I cannot wait. So cool. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Pamela.
It's my pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Astronomy Cast, a nonprofit resource provided by Astrosphere New Media Association, Fraser Kane, and Dr. Pamela Gay. You can find show notes and transcripts for every episode at astronomycast.com. You can email us at info@astronomycast.com, tweet us at astronomycast, like us on Facebook, or circle us on Google+. We record our show live on Google+, every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, or 2000 Greenwich Mean Time. If you missed the live event, you can always catch up over at cosmoquest.org. If you enjoy Astronomy Cast, why not give us a donation? It helps us pay for bandwidth, transcripts, and show notes. Just click the donate link on the website. All donations are tax deductible for U.S. residents. You can support the show for free, too. Write a review or recommend us to your friends. Every little bit helps. Click Support the Show on our website to see some suggestions. To subscribe to the show, point your podcatching software at astronomycast.com/podcast.xml or subscribe directly from iTunes. Our music is provided by Travis Searle, and the show is edited by Preston Gibson.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.